Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
That's a haul, folks. That's a haul, folks.
Good morning. It's Raymond Parsh III, and you're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also find us on OUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. You can give us a call today on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. It was a tremendous weekend. We'll dive into everything that occurred. Women's World Cup action. There was the men's team apparently played well in whatever tournament they're playing in. There was wrestling. There's Major League Baseball. There's a plethora of things to get to. But let's start off the week right. Let's start off the day right. And say good morning to everyone out there. And start off the day going, who's having a better year than Alvin Gentry? That's the man that you heard right there. The Pelicans head coach. Now remember, the season was one of disarray. It was a season of, it was tumultuous to say the least. And Alvin had to be up front and center for that. He had to deal with all the arrows shot at the Pelicans' direction by national media, while his former general manager and front office leader just let him have to be the one to field all the questions about the Anthony Davis drama. He gained a lot of respect for doing that, not only from his players, but from those inside and outside of the organization. But if you're Alvin Gentry, you're having a tremendous spring into summer. You get the contract from David Griffin. He has your back. Your team then wins the NBA draft lottery. And he had that great celebration when that occurred, where he jumped up and down and then he had some colorful language. You get Zion Williamson, you draft him, you have your vice president of basketball operations making moves left and right, increasing the value of the franchise, improving the franchise greatly throughout the front office, and then he trades Anthony Davis, gets a huge haul back for him left and right, and the city is electric, excited about the upcoming season, about Zion Williamson. And after going through all that hardship, all that adversity, now he's being rewarded with all this greatness. And of course, he decides to take a moment to throw a little shade at the superstar that they just got done trading. Because if you remember, Anthony Davis, memorably, in his final game with the Pelicans, left the arena wearing, "That's all, folks." Of course, the famous line by Porky Pig from the Looney Tunes cartoons.
You know the one.
Yes. And Alvin did so. I love the pause that Alvin. Can you play that again for me, Cody? Where Alvin Gentry, it's just a community event. Zion's out there. He's taking food recommendations from kids out at a park. It's one of those great PR events following the draft over the weekend. And Alvin just drops this on us.
"That's a haul, folks." "That's a haul, folks."
He liked it too. He'd been waiting for that one. You can tell Alvin. You can tell Coach Gentry had waited for. He'd been waiting to say that for a couple of days.
Carrying that one around in his back pocket for a while.
Good morning, Cody.
Oh, good morning, Raymond.
So Alvin had himself. He's having fun, as he should, right? Because the season was miserable. It was absolutely miserable, and you could tell that he was miserable. Yet he still went out there, despite having to be forced to play a star player that did not want to be there, had to restrict his minutes, dealing with injuries, dealing with all the distraction that came along with the Anthony Davis trade. He is having himself a hell of a spring and a hell of a summer. Now, he's going to have to make sure this team comes together, and he's going to have to make sure that they win games. Because at the end of the day, that's Alvin Gentry's job, right? His job is to coach the New Orleans Pelicans and coach them to more victories than losses and coach them to the playoffs. Because that's the expectation David Griffin is giving him. He may get a year or so to be able to do that. But David Griffin was not brought in to be mediocre. David Griffin is not poached away one of the best trainers in the association from the Phoenix Suns. He didn't poach a young, dynamic front office mind in Langdon to be serving as the general manager of the Pelicans. He didn't make all the moves that he's made. He hasn't did all these wheeling and dealing by trading away Anthony Davis and getting the haul back from him and trading away Solomon Hill and the number 4 overall pick that they got in the Anthony Davis trade to even do more wheels and deals to flip more assets into bigger assets and more assets. You know, you look at this team, Lonzo Ball, Drew Holiday, Brandon Ingram, Zion Williamson, the young man out of Texas. I think the young man out of Texas, Jackson, he's going to be a backup to start off with. Josh Hart coming off the bench. They're going to continue making some moves. The Pelicans are continue to be aggressive. They're going to continue making more moves to get even better. And if they can get a couple of free agents, let's say they can even get an all-star caliber big down there that can provide veteran leadership for the young man who they drafted in the top 10 in the lottery out of Texas, the true center, the 6'11" emerging star who's a little raw. Maybe if they do that with the pieces they have, maybe they're a fringe playoff team. Alvin will be granted a little bit of leeway here, because Zion, as dynamic as he's going to be, and that he is right now, and that he's going to be, he's still going to be a 19-year-old rookie. He's going to have some ups and downs. There's going to be some games that are going to be extremely frustrating to watch. There's going to be other games that are going to be tremendous. You're going to be like, wow, this cat is absolutely sensational. But there will be nights where you go, what the hell? Because he's going to be a 19-year-old rookie learning how to play in the NBA with grown men. It's one thing being the absolute best player on the floor when you're in college. Guess what? The majority of the folks in the NBA were the best guys in college or the best guys in their conference. There's no pushovers. There just isn't. So he's going to have to be developed. If I'm Alvin Gentry right now, I probably have the youngest roster in the NBA. My oldest player is 30 years old. That's Etuan Moore. Next up is Drew Holiday at 29. Everyone else is 24, 23, 22, 21, 19. And Alvin Gentry is also going to have to not only develop the big fella out of Duke and the young man out of Texas and the point guard that they got out of Virginia Tech, which will help give them depth. They're all going to be 19, 20-year-old rookies. He's going to have to develop Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram and Josh Hart, who are all embracing going to New Orleans and getting a fresh start. But the reason why Julius Randle had success last year with the Pels is nearly a double-double machine after being considered trash by the Lakers. And D'Angelo Russell did the same thing with the Brooklyn Nets becoming an all-star. It's because they got good coaching. So Alvin knows how to do this because they saw someone in Julius Randle last year that came to the Pels and was considerably a far better player than advertised. But it's one thing to do that with one guy from the dumpster fire, that is the Lake Show. It's another thing to be able to have to do that for three guys. So Gentry's going to have his work cut out for him. He's going to have to kind of repair the psyche a little bit, help build up, help Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, and Josh Hart find their confidence again as professional athletes. He has to do that with those three guys, and then he's going to have to develop the rooks, Zion Williamson and the other two lottery picks. So you're looking at six guys under the age of 24 years old that the old salty veteran, Alvin Gentry, is going to have to work with. Now, he's going to lean on his veteran players like Etuan Moore and, more importantly, Drew Holiday. But if I'm Alvin Gentry, I'm definitely on board with David Griffin getting me another free agent. The more veteran presence you have in that locker room, the better, because the veterans will help the younger guys as much as the coach will, especially at the NBA level. College is a little bit different. College, you lean on more on your coaching. The college game is designed around coaches as the stars, not the players. The NBA is the exact opposite. So Alvin's going to have to bring in some veteran guys. And they don't have to be world beaters by any stretch of the imagination. Okay, you're not talking about going out and getting a Tobias Harris or Kawhi Leonard or even a Chris Middleton, who I've brought up on the show before. No, just some other guys. Someone, say, I don't know, is someone like a Mikal Bridges, defensive player from the Phoenix Suns. Even someone like a Mason Plumlee, who's on an expiring contract. Steven Adams from Oklahoma City. Once again, I'm focusing on the bigs there because I feel like, or even a Serge Ibaka from the Toronto Raptors. You need a big fella. You need a big fella to come in and give a veteran presence. You'd like to go after someone like Al Horford, but I don't think he's going to be available. So it's going to be one of those kind of guys, like a Steven Adams, a Johnson, someone of that caliber that David Griffin's probably going to look at either via trade or free agency. Don't be surprised if the Pels make two more moves, either signing two free agents, middle-tier free agents, or trading for a middle-tier free agent and getting another one. They're not done. They got the $30 million cap space. So right now, everything is a gravy train on biscuit wheels for Alvin Gentry. And Griff's going to put together the pieces, but it's going to be on Alvin to take that great haul and turn it into a playoff team. We'll see if we'll be able to do that. But right now, the party keeps going in New Orleans, as it should. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Number nine, Drew Brees won his court case. We'll talk about it right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on the Stadium Sports Network 32.1. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you'd like, you can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Right before the weekend commenced, or rather, this actually Friday night this occurred, late Friday evening to be exact, Drew Brees, number nine himself, won his court case against a former friend slash jeweler over fraud. The Saints QB is now owed $6.1 million. Now remember, Drew missed some time during OTAs and minicamp because of this trial. He had to go and testify, I want to say it was on June 6th. So he had missed some time. He was away from the team and the team facilities for a little while dealing with this. Jurors in San Diego decided on Friday that Drew Brees is owed more than $6.1 million in damages after a jeweler by the name of Vahid Moradi exploited their friendship with the Saints quarterback to sell him extremely overpriced diamonds. Now, the jeweler and his attorney, Kevin Rooney, quote, said they will passionately disagree with the verdict and intend to appeal it. And that could make the amount that what's been rewarded to Brees and his wife, Brittany, far less than the $6.1 million, or wipe it out completely. This quote, the jury worked hard and saw Mr. Moradi as the confidence man that he is, end quote, said a statement from the Breezes and their attorney, Andrew Kim. Brees took the witness stand back on June the 6th, the first day of testimony at the trial, to say that Moradi and C.J. Charles Jewelers sold him and his wife, Brittany, $15 million worth of diamonds. That's just stupid money. That's just stupid money. If you just got like $15 million laying around that you can just go buy diamonds with, I'm not knocking Drew. They do a ton of charitable work, him and his wife, Cody. I'm not knocking it, but that's stupid money if you just got, you know, you're just saying, you know what would be great? Let's go buy some diamonds. $15 million worth of diamonds, among them an $8 million ring.
Drew loves his wife, doesn't he? He just adores that lady, apparently.
Happy wife, happy life.
Fair
enough. That's what they say, right?
That is what they say.
That is what they say. $15 million worth of diamonds they bought between 2012 and 16, among them an $8 million ring.
That's that Super Bowl money kicking in there, apparently.
We got to have a conversation with Drew. Be like, Drew, we get it. You love your wife. You got money. But you're making the rest of us.
You're making me look bad, bro.
Yeah, you're making the rest of the fellas look like chumps here. Okay? Brees also described growing so close to Moradi that over the course of about 15 years that he completely believed the jeweler when he said the diamonds were investments that would rapidly appreciate in value and would likely weather downturns in the economy such as the 2008 financial collapse. However, an appraiser told the Breezes back in 2017 that they had paid roughly $7 million more for the collection than it was actually worth. The appraiser's opinion was that the $8 million ring was worth roughly half of that.
Why? This just seems like this seems like a very bad situation, because if it all turns out to be true, which so far in court of law it has been proven to be the case. I know there's appeals and all that, but I mean, Drew won this case.
Mm-hmm.
What a scumbag. The jeweler guy, you know, from what it seems like with all these things. Because, I mean, if you've known someone for over 15, like, you know, Ray, we've known each other less than a year. And I don't think I could take $5 from you and be like, hey, 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 I got him. Much less know somebody for 15 years and take him for $6.1 million. Like, oh, I don't know.
This happens all the time, right?
I guess.
Real estate, land investments, company investments. People that have money, and particularly athletes and entertainers, are always befriended by people who say, hey, man, you're doing great things, but have you thought about life after football or after basketball? I got this great real estate investment opportunity, this land development. I got this new startup tech company. I got this great drawer, you know, I can get these great diamonds for you. This is how it always works.
Why don't you invest with my new company? It's called Enron. I think you would do very well giving me all of your money.
Bree sued last year, asserting that his former friend admitted to grossly marking up the diamonds' prices and explaining that away by saying the prices were what they could be resold for in a number of years. The Brees accused him of fraud, breach of contract, and violating California business laws, adding that he also pocketed nearly $250,000 that they had given him for a watch that they ultimately changed their minds about buying. He has contended that it was actually the Brees' appraiser, Aldo Dillanilli, who scammed the couple. The jeweler accused him of telling Drew and Brittany Brees to sell their diamonds on the cheap to a dealer with whom Dillanilli was in cahoots. That way, Morati said Dillanilli got his associate a great deal on diamonds at the expense of the Saints quarterback and his wife.
It's a lot of he said, she said.
Oh, it's a lot of.
And when money's involved, that large amount of money is involved, no one's just going to roll over. So,
Brees' clash with Morati is not the first time he's claimed someone has ripped him off. Brees settled a lawsuit back in 2014 in which he asserted that ex-teammate Kevin Hozier convinced him to invest $160,000 in film tax credits that didn't exist. Other Saints figures, including Coach Sean Payton and former tight end Jeremy Shockey, also settled with Hozier. Yeah, if someone tells you it's too good to be true, the deal is, it's too good to be true! So, Drew Brees won his day in court for now. We'll monitor the situation. We got to hit a break. More sports talk coming up right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. Free over-the-air sports network. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Let off today's show talking about the Pelicans having themselves a good day, good weekend. They had a good draft Thursday. They had a good day Friday. They carried that over to Saturday, Sunday. Today, probably on Wednesday as well. They're having themselves a heck of a time, but they got to pull it together. They got to pull it together. Let's talk a lot about Drew Brees winning his date in court against a former friend, a jeweler who the Brees contend basically defrauded them of millions of dollars. They are awarded $6.1 million in damages. We'll see if that total holds up through the appeals process. But also want to take a time of something that also broke over the weekend concerning the LSU football program. Multiple media outlets have reported on this, both national and regionally here, about an issue involving the football program and a six-figure payment to the father of a former player. an LSU booster, or in this case, I guess a former LSU booster, named John Paul Funes. He pled guilty to stealing more than $500,000 from a foundation where he worked as a fundraiser. And reports have that he paid $180,000 to a man that Yahoo Sports, for example, confirmed on Friday is the father of former Tiger star lineman Vidal Alexander. In federal documents, a man identified as Individual C allegedly received approximately $180,000 in foundation funds from Funes. The man is James Alexander, the father of Vidal Alexander. His identity was first reported on Thursday night by the Baton Rouge Business Report. Funes' lawyer, Walter Green, declined comment to Yahoo Sports when asked explicitly whether he or his client had heard from the NCAA. An LSU spokesman did say in a statement that LSU has been engaged with the NCAA about the quote-unquote ongoing inquiry. LSU has known about the alleged payment since 2018, but the NCAA has been limited in its investigative ability as to not interfere with Funes' case. So right after the basketball program puts its scandalous reports to bed, now you have this. I've said this before. I'm never going to be surprised if boosters get involved and pay someone's parents or uncle or grandparents. It happens all the time. This is not an LSU situation by any stretch of the imagination if the alleged reports are true. Once again, allegedly. That said, it never surprised me, but once again, this is just something that big-time college programs have to deal with. So James Alexander reportedly received a six-figure sum of stolen money from John Paul Funes, the former chief fundraiser for Our Lady of the Lake Hospitals. Oh. So not only was he a fundraiser, he was a fundraiser for hospitals. He admitted in federal court last week that he did, in fact, embezzle more than $550,000 as the foundation's fundraiser. But isn't that how that always works, right? Every time we hear something like this, it's always when someone's in court. You ever notice that? These reports never really come out beforehand. It's always after someone's about ready to go to prison. Yes, I embezzled money. Yes, I paid off people. Here's all the people that I... It's always a situation, or at least it comes off as, I'm going down with the ship. Who can I grab on with me? Who can I keep on the ship with me as we go and sink into the icy waters? If you remember, Alexander was a four-year starter at LSU from 2012 to 2016. He was selected in the seventh round of the 2016 NFL draft by the Oakland Raiders. The reports do not state exactly when the transaction occurred, which is key here. Funes, who is 49 years old, and he's from Baton Rouge, did plead guilty last week and charged to wire fraud and money laundering during a brief hearing before U.S. District Judge. Sentencing will occur at a date to be announced. Once again, Funes admitted that he embezzled more than $500,000 over a seven-year period, stealing gift cards meant for cancer patients, flying family and friends to LSU and Saints football games, and sending money to persons who did little to no work for the foundation he headed. Once again, I'll say it again, and then I'm going to let Cody take the floor because my man's got something to say as a man who bleeds the purple and gold. Okay? This man admitted that he embezzled more than $500,000 over a seven-year period. So he did it over 7 years. So he was trying to be smart about it, taking a few thousand dollars here and there. He stole gift cards meant for cancer patients through the foundation that he was working for as a fundraiser for hospitals. Then he decided to take said money and fly his family and friends to LSU and New Orleans Saints football games, and then sending money to persons who did little to no work at all for the foundation that he served as the head of. This comes on the heels that earlier in this week, the Business Report had reported that two family members of former LSU quarterback Rohan Davey are unnamed individuals in a federal court documents alleging fraud by Paul Funes.
And that's what I was about. That's what I was going to get at, is that these reports are saying that, you know, this fraud goes back 7 years, but is it just a coincidence that a couple of family members of Rohan Davey also pop up on this list? Rohan Davey went to LSU more than 7 years ago. And so neither you nor I can sit here and say equivocally that is the case, that these things, because I mean, maybe it is a coincidence, but it sure looks and smells even funnier than that. You know what I mean? If
I will say this, and people may be surprised by this, I don't care how diligent of an athletic director you may be, and I don't care if you have people on staff to monitor these things, Cody, there's so much money swirling around big-time college athletics, there's no way to prevent this from happening. There just isn't. Look, if you spent any time around a coaching staff at the collegiate level, or at the high school level for that matter, how much downtime do they have? None, right? I mean, their families don't know who they are. Once they retire, they're like, who are you? Are you my father? They have no idea, okay? There's no downtime for these guys. It is an 18-hour gig. So, and they're worried about tape and conditioning and making sure that they have one of their players that's passing their grades. Where in the world do the athletic directors and the coaches have time to monitor people who, 9 times out of 10, Cody, they always have a respectable title, right? This isn't like
executive vice president of
right,
something.
Right. This isn't a cat that you run onto the street corner at 2 o'clock in the morning that's trying to sell, you know, it's trying to sell you something.
Right.
This is not, we're talking to people, business suits.
They wear
wealthy
suits, exactly.
they're always in photo ops. They're giving out big checks at events, right? These are the people, if you look at any of all the corruption cases, whether it's Miami football to USC or whatever it might be, it's always big-time people living in big-time houses that are supposed to be rich, right? And, you know, maybe we have to retrain ourselves to think differently when we think of fraud and when we think of people allegedly doing fraudulent things behind the scenes, because there's so much of this that goes around. There's so much of this that goes around. You had mentioned the Rohan Davey thing. Davey reportedly had confirmed to the Business Report last week on Tuesday that his mother and sister, quote, are the Florida-based individuals A and B in those documents.
Yeah, and to go along with what we were talking about of does this go back farther than 7 years? Is Rohan Davey, how are they paying? Funes allegedly gave Davey's relatives 18 checks in total, and those 18 checks went over the $100,000 limit, $107,000 for 18 checks. What's really weird, though, is that Davey told the Business Report that he didn't know if his relatives spoke, like you said. He was aware of the allegations, but had no idea why Funes would be sending his relatives money, according to Rohan Davey, because these alleged payments happened after his time at LSU. So Rohan Davey is trying to say that it is a coincidence that he has no clue why his family would be getting money.
And apparently, by a report from the Advocate, that Rohan Davey's family funneled back approximately $63,000 of
that. I saw that. I don't understand. That's a confusing. I don't understand what that means. They sent back half, almost, essentially.
Last time Rohan Davey suited up for the purple and gold was 2001, my man.
I just don't. This whole thing is weird.
Yeah, I don't understand. Funes was fired in November as the OLOL Foundation's president and chief executive officer.
Yeah, if Ochsner wasn't coming in and pushing around Our Lady of the Lake a little bit before, this is not a good look.
So,
although one bad apple, I don't want to, you know what I mean, could just be one loser messing up a lot of stuff.
It wouldn't be the first time that someone's brand was sullied that way because someone doing things that no one knew about, right?
Right.
It happens. It happens all the time in all walks of life. So let's say that once again. Once again, this is someone who I will say this, admitted that he embezzled more than $500,000 over a 7-year period, flew family and friends to LSU and Saints games, sent money to persons who did little or no work for the foundation. Boy, that sure does sound like money laundering to me. And my favorite part of all this is that this is someone who stole gift cards meant for cancer patients. This is what, that's all you need to know about the caliber of this individual. And he admitted to this. He admitted to taking the gift cards for little Johnny or little Susie who are stricken with cancer inside the hospital. And was like, you know what? I'm going to take that. Thank you very much. He's going to put it in his pocket, and then he's going to go out and spend it. Like, come on, man.
If not just spend come it, on. Apparently, if not spend it, apparently give it to high-profile athletes in that Baton Rouge area.
Oh.
It pains me to say it, but I'm not going to sit here and sugarcoat things. It looks like a mess, to put it politely.
Just wow. Just when you thought that...
Now, who knows if this can have any bearing whatsoever on LSU now? I mean, maybe, but I don't...
I will say this. It's news right now. If you think that this is going to affect Ed Orgeron and his staff and that team, no. Because you saw what happened last year when the things were soaring with the kids transferring out and you had some off-the-field issues and everything like that, and everyone predicted them to finish last in the SEC, and what did they do? They blocked out all the noise and had a tremendous season, their first 10-win season in years.
Right.
He is the right coach to kind of deal with these kind of things because he can get the guys to focus in on him and their message and block out all the noise.
Does it legally mess with them, though? I understand, you know, psychologically.
No, because it doesn't cross over.
Fair.
And as we know, even if there is an NCAA investigation, how long will that take? It'll probably be February of 2032 before we get something. So, I mean, no, this is just news right now. I think it's more of a news about the gentleman and the foundation and the hospital that he works for. But it is interesting that this payment's allegedly, once again, he alleges he made that type of payment. But now Rohan Davies involved earlier in the week for a separate thing. This guy, once again, these people get into these powerful positions, Cody, and then they want to rub elbows with athletes and be power players at universities. And when that happens, it usually 9 times out of 10 leads to something bad happening. Always. History tells us over and over again that that's what occurs. So we'll have to monitor that and keep an eye on that. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll close out the first hour strong. Jakeenan Gant. That's right. He might have went undrafted, but he's going to be able to live out his dream of playing professional basketball. We'll talk about that. About the Raging Cajun Star when we come back here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. It's just Stadium 32.1. It's free over the air. Make sure to check it out. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you want to give us a call, pick up the phone, dial the ARCO Equipment Hotline 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. We'll let off today's show talking about how the New Orleans Pelicans kept the party going from Thursday night's draft all the way through the weekend. Alvin Gentry throwing a little shade at his former player. Good for Alvin. He's living his best life right now. Deservedly so. We'll also touch on Drew Brees settling his court case with a former juror who defrauded him We also talked about the recent, we just got done wrapping up the LSU case with a former hospital foundation CEO who apparently was defrauding people left and right using gift cards for cancer patients.
$550,000.
Over a seven-year period. Was also going to LSU all, games and Saints games.
And that's all that's just part of this report. God knows.
Yes, that's just part of this.
If
this
I'm
one,
allowed
this,
to speculate a tiny, tiny bit, that's just maybe what we know about, or at least allegedly know about.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong at all. Because that's, yeah. That's where that's going to go. So, but let's end it. Let's look. Some negative news we had to tackle. Okay, anytime we're talking about fraud, the stealing of the money, it's not good. Let's talk about something that was good news. Former Raging Cajun star Jakeenan Gant went undrafted in Thursday night's draft, as expected. But on Friday, he did sign a contract. The two-time Sun Belt Conference Defensive Player of the Year inked a deal with the Indiana Pacers. One undrafted, but the Pacers were one of the teams that he worked out for. They were really high on him. He also worked out for the Toronto Raptors, the Memphis Grizzlies. He worked out for nearly half a dozen teams. And the Pacers really liked him, so much so that Jakeenan did not wait very long to sign his deal with the Indiana Pacers. Yet that gives just another former Bob Marlin star an opportunity to play professional basketball. Remember, Frank Bartley earned All-Canadian League honors this past season. You have Elfrid Payton, who just wrapped up his first season with the New Orleans Pelicans. He's a free agent. You got Sean Long, who played briefly in the NBA with the Philadelphia 76ers and their G League affiliate, and he's now about to enter his second season down under. So Jakeenan Gant signed one of those two-way contracts to play for the Indiana Pacers. He'll have an opportunity to make his way up to the big roster. So congratulations to Key and the Raging Cajuns for yet getting another guy to the next level. Bob Marlin's got to be a proud coach, proud papa this morning. That'll do it for the first hour here of RP3 and Company. When we come back, we'll start off hour two talking about Pistol Pete right here on KDN Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning. Welcome to hour number two of RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III. Cody Schutz is the man's on the ones and twos. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over the air, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you'd like to give us a call, feel free, pick up the phone, dial the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Led off today's show talking about how the New Orleans Pelicans have kept the party going from Thursday night's draft all the way through the weekend with Alvin Gentry throwing a little shade towards Anthony Davis, which was, I'm not going to lie to you, pretty funny. We also talked about Drew Brees winning his day in court against his former friend slash jeweler for defrauding him. He was awarded $6.1 $6.1 million in a California courtroom on Friday evening, our time. We're talking about the reports coming out about former foundation president of a Baton Rouge hospital admitting to using funds.
Our Lady of the Lake specifically.
Yes.
Very big hospital.
Using funds to, some more defrauding, using foundation funds to send friends and family members to LSU games and Saints games. Also taking gift cards meant for cancer patients and using them for himself. He stole essentially over $500,000. And apparently, due to report, this is also connected, he was giving out money to Rohan Davies' family members, extended family members, for we really not for sure what reason yet.
Neither's Rohan.
Neither's Rohan. And then, obviously, a payment allegedly was made to former star offensive lineman Alexander's father. So we'll keep an eye on that. We also touched on Jakeena Gant getting his chance to play pro ball as the Indiana Pacers inked him to a two-way deal. The former Raging Cajun star. But I want to talk about Pistol Pete.
Well, why, Raymond?
Well, it was his birthday over the weekend. Saturday okay. was his birthday. The late, great Pistol Pete. And, you know...
The PMAC, right? The PMAC.
Pete
Maravich. Yeah, okay.
Pete Maravich Assembly Center.
Just checking.
And this sprang to mind because of all my years covering events in the state. I admittedly was primarily a high school beat writer. It's what I preferred. And I'd cover some colleges, Northwestern State, UL, but I have covered LSU. But before this last year, I had never covered the LSU basketball team on a regular basis.
Okay.
So I bring this up because I remember going, and I had a little extra time at the PMAC one day before a game. I think it was the first game I went to. It was the Memphis game when Penny Hardaway came to town, first year head coach there of the Memphis Tigers. And I'm walking around outside the PMAC, and I'm like, oh, yeah, this is everything that everyone kind of said it was. There's the big statue of Bob Pettit, one of the greatest to ever do it, not only at LSU but in the NBA. Big statue of him. Big statue of Shaq.
Right.
And I looked around, and I was like, there's not a statue of Pistol Pete anywhere. That's weird. I didn't think anything of it. I can go inside. I mean, the building's called the Pete Maravich Assembly Center, for crying out loud. His jersey's retired. So I started asking around. Well, and then I found out the answer why. But I was reminded of this over the weekend, that the man considered to many to be the greatest player in LSU history.
Yeah.
Who the team plays in a building named after him. Is not in the LSU Athletics Hall of Fame. That's right. Pistol Pete Maravich is not a member of LSU Athletics Hall of Fame. And when I bring that up to people, and I always have to remind people of that, including diehard LSU fans, and they do this. They go, what? What do you mean Pistol Pete's not in the Hall of Fame? Couple things. The Pete Maravich Assembly Center was funded and named by the state of Louisiana. Not by LSU, by the way. Okay? LSU has certain rules and regulations for eligibility into their athletic hall of fame.
It's the first line. It's literally the first line of the eligibility. It's like, you can read one sentence of these eligibility statements or requirements here. And one line in, you'd be like, oh, well, that's why Pete's not in.
To be eligible, this is directly from the website.
I'm looking at it, too.
To be eligible for the LSU Athletic Hall of Fame in the athlete category, the individual must have been granted or earned bachelorette, professional, or graduate degree by LSU or by some other regionally accredited institution of higher learning, have earned one or more letters in a varsity sport at LSU, have gained national distinction through superlative performance as an athlete and have established a personal reputation for character and citizenship, which reflects favorably on the university.
It's a whole lot of humdrum to say what they really want to say.
Then the name needs to be changed. If you're going to say, first of all, it's fame, it's Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
It's not Hall of graduates. Okay? It's not the Hall of Fame for graduates. It's the LSU Athletics Hall of Fame. And I just, it just boggles my mind on this. Because Pistol Pete is identified with LSU, correct?
Right.
He's not in the Hall of Fame. He's not in their Hall of Fame. He's in the Sports Hall of Fame. He's in numerous, countless different halls of fame. He's not in the Hall of Fame. Now, oddly enough, this is the other weird thing. So, the on-campus approved statues is also another thing that has to be done. Shaq's was dedicated in 2011. They did Bob Pettit's in 2016. Now, both Shaq and Bob Pettit are in the LSU Athletic Hall of Fame only because they both have degrees from LSU. Remember, Shaq went back to school, I think, towards the end of his playing career and got his degree.
Yeah.
Okay? That's the only reason why there's a Shaq statue outside the PMAC, and the only reason why Shaq is in the Hall of Fame is because he went back to school and got his degree. They have commissioned, they announced the Pete Maravich statue in February of 2016. That's still to be determined when it's going to be dedicated. So they are building Pete a statue, even though he's not in the Hall of Fame.
And that was, there was some, I remember there being some politics to get that done, too.
Oh, yeah.
There that had to that be votes done.
Oh, yeah. There was all types of stuff that had to make that
passed, and yeah.
They're building one for Skip Bertman.
Duh.
For baseball. Still to be determined. And Billy Cannon, his was announced in 2017. They finally dedicated it last year. They unveiled it last year. I remember seeing being there for the game where they unveiled it. So, would you like to know how many men's basketball players there are in the Hall of Fame, in LSU's Athletics Hall of Fame, Cody? Would you like me to tell you how many there are?
Please.
9.
All right, so you got a team and a bench. You got a team and a bench. Are they the 9 best players to ever play at LSU?
2 are head coaches.
Okay, so no, you don't have 2 players. You got.
So you're down to 7.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. So Malcolm Sparky Wade, back in the day, 1937, obviously. Joe Dean in 52, Bob Pettit in 54.
All right, I know one of those names now.
Okay. Rudy Macklin.
Yep.
Obviously. Mm-hmm. Okay, he was one of the best. If you did a starting 5, he'd probably be your power forward. Or your number 3. He'd be your small forward. Shaq in 2000.
Yep.
Frank Bryan in 2013. And Collis Temple Jr. in 2017. Now you're thinking, hey.
Surprises me to only hear one Temple.
Now, Pistol Pete's jersey is retired, and that's a whole different subject, how they retired his jersey. Right. It's number 23, even though he's not in the Hall of Fame, because that's another part that you have to be a graduate to get your jersey retired at LSU. Football, they do a little bit better job in. All the guys from the 58 team, Jerry Stovall, Johnny Robinson, Billy Cannon, that era, Tommy Casanova, which came a little bit later, they're in. But that was a different era of graduating, right, in sports. Modern players, Burt Jones, that's not modern, Kevin Mawai, Kevin Falk, and Anthony Booger McFarland are like the 3 big names of guys in the past 25 years, 30 years from football. There's been a lot of great players that have come through LSU.
I mean, let's be real.
But a lot of them leave because if you're a great player, you're not sticking around your senior year anymore. Past 1992, this is the whole thing about it. Past 1992 for basketball, baseball, and football, you're not, 9 times out of 10, you're not sticking around for your senior year.
No. Can I pose to you and to you listening what I think maybe is a happy medium to find between this? Because I do understand why you would think maybe if you don't graduate from the university, you shouldn't go into the Hall of Fame, because then, you know, it keeps the Hall of Fame sort of, I guess, exclusive or prestigious, if you will. My idea, though, what I would rather see happen, and I don't know if there's any talk of this, is like they talk about the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. Why not open up a separate wing, the steroid era wing? Why not open up different things? Why not have a wing at the LSU Hall of Fame for guys who maybe didn't graduate but still undoubtedly deserve some sort of recognition in the museum of the greatest athletes to ever put on the purple and gold for LSU? You can still have your official Hall of Fame. These are the guys that are in the Hall of Fame. They've graduated from the university. But then open up a second wing, a hallway somewhere else, that when you walk in, it's got a sign over the top that you can call. It'll be sponsored by somebody. You know, it'll be the walk-ons, non-graduate Louisiana or LSU Hall of Fame or something. Why not add something to the Hall of Fame, the way you don't have to take away the quote-unquote prestige they're trying to add to it by making it more exclusive, but then you can still also honor guys that, like Pistol Pete and other people who absolutely deserve to be.
My rebuttal to that is, why do you need to do that? Like, why can't you just come to the realization that it's not 1950 or 1970?
Because they're going to start having no one to put in.
Right, right. So, and here's the thing. Here's my thing. They did back in 2009. Remember, you got to put together the all-century team for basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And if you remember, it was two groups that voted on that. Okay? It was a select committee of former LSU players and Louisiana sports historians that came up with 50% of the vote, Cody. The other 50% were fans, okay, who voted online. Right. So it was fan votes. It was only supposed to be 15 guys. Ended up being 16. 16 men on the all-century team for LSU men's basketball. Do you want to know how many of those 16 are in the LSU Athletics Hall of Fame?
I'm going to say eight.
Six.
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 Right.
Six. Six. That's it.
That does kind of show your standards are maybe a little wonky.
Six. That's it. No Pistol Pete. Okay. No, the artist formerly known as Chris Jackson.
Right.
If you did a starting five of the five, your starting five of the best five players in LSU history, two of them are not in the Hall of Fame. Pistol Pete and Chris Jackson. They're not there. Your two guards on that team will not be there.
Right.
You could have Rudy Mack at the three, Bob Pettit play the four, and Shaq play the five. So, hey, down low, you're taken care of. But your two guards are not there. And even your backups. Big Baby Davis didn't graduate. He ain't on there. Maybe you throw Joe Dean at guard. He's in the hall. Garrett Temple, no Tyrus Thomas, no Brandon Bass. I just, no Ricky Blanton. No Stromal Swift. I just, no Heisey Carter back in the day. And if it's the Hall of Fame, I understand that your requirements are, and when they set this, so many years ago,
right,
guys went to college to graduate. But the best athletes, the one that bring you the most recognition.
The Hall of Famers?
The guys who bring you national championships, the individuals who bring you recognition, who help jersey sales, who help sell out seats in the PMAC or inside Tiger Stadium, are not staying for 4 years and they're not graduating from your university because they're that talented that they're going to the professional level early. And Pistol Pete did that in the 70s. The guy was a phenomenon. Pistol Pete had his birthday over the weekend. The damn arena is named after him, and the man is not in their own Athletics Hall of Fame. We're going to make that a poll question today at 1037thegame.com. Look on the homepage. We're going to put it up there for you. How ridiculous is it that Pistol Pete Maravich is not in the LSU Athletics Hall of Fame?
Not a little, a lot.
There you go. See? Boom. It's just Pistol Pete's not in the LSU Athletics Hall of Fame. Like,
and let the record show.
What?
Let the record show. I know what? I was being not argumentative, but I was playing the other side of the argument here with you. But let the record show that I do believe Pistol Pete should be in the LSU Hall of Fame. Just because I was playing the other side of the argument, don't get it twisted.
Two of the five best players in LSU history are not in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
Just wrap your brain around that. And wrap your brain around this, listener. If Shaq wouldn't have gone back and gotten his degree once his playing career was coming to an end.
Right. I think he was already a member of the Heat by the time he had done this.
Right. He wouldn't be in there either.
Nope. He wouldn't have a – I mean, it's – I don't know.
Think about that. The Diesel. The man who reps LSU harder than most. We could make an argument that Shaq reps LSU harder than anyone in the modern era, regardless of what sport it might be. If he hadn't gone back and gotten that degree, the big fellow wouldn't be in the Athletic Hall of Fame. And he serves as an ambassador for LSU more than anyone else. Always did. That crazy that is.
Yeah.
Come on, LSU. You got to change. You got to adapt to the times and change, for crying out loud. Got me all worked up. It ain't even Friday. It's not even Friday. It's not time for rant of the week. I gotta take a break. We gotta hit a break. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. The All Louisiana Sports Writers Association baseball team, Louisiana College baseball team at that, was released over the weekend. Now, leading the way on the team was, of course, Tulane's All-American, consensus All-American, Cody Hosey, who is a first-round draft pick by the Los Angeles Dodgers, the slugging third baseman for the Green Wave. He led the way. But LSU, UL were well represented on the team as well. Some of the bigger award winners before we get to those guys, though. Hosey was named the hitter of the year. Hudson Haskin, also of Tulane, was tabbed as freshman of the year. Southeastern Louisiana's Corey Jaconi was named pitcher of the year. UL Monroe's outfielder Trent Tingelstad was newcomer of the year. And second-year skipper Carrick Jackson, friend of the program from Southern University, was the overwhelming choice of the state's coach of the year. Now, locally, what about UL? Well, let me tell you. They had some picks on there as well, representing the Ragin' Cajuns. Hunter Castles, starting second baseman, senior for the Ragin' Cajuns, who batted .338 with 7 home runs and 38 ribbies, got on the second team. Hayden Cantrell, the star sophomore for the Ragin' Cajuns, former Terlings Catholic star who batted over .300 with 9 home runs and 31 RBIs and was a first-team All-Sunbelt Conference. He also earned second-team honors there at shortstop for UL. And the one Ragin' Cajun to earn first-team honors was Todd Lott, the slugging big fella designated hitter. That's the distinction he received on the All-LSWA team. Reminder, he hit .332 with 8 home runs, 48 RBIs, first team All Sun Belt Conference. He was also drafted fairly high. What about LSU, you say? I know that's what Cody's waiting. He's like, hey, give me the good stuff. I need to know about my Tigers. Not a problem. So, Al Garza, first team at catcher.
A little surprising there.
I was a little surprised, but he had that surge at the end.
Right. I understand. Just that was the one that caught my eye.
He caught my eye, too. You and I are on the same page. Saul Garza is your starting catcher on the first team. He batted over 300 with 5 home runs, 27 RBIs, SEC All-Tournament team. Josh Smith, the shortstop going to the New York Yankees, where he'll play second base for LSU. He was on the first team as well as the starting shortstop. He batted .346 this past year, SEC All-Tournament team. And, of course, Lafayette High's own Antoine Duplantis. He batted .319, 11 home runs, 64 RBIs, second team All-SEC, all-time hits leader at LSU. He was one of the starting outfielders on the first team as well. Pretty impressive there. Zach Watson got second team honors for LSU in the outfield. And then Devin Fondo received honorable mention honors, as did Cade Beloso. That was it for the Tigers. If you want to know more about the 2019 LSWA All-Louisiana College Baseball Team, please go to the 1037thegame.com. Check it out. It's on our homepage. You can read all about it. We got it up as a blog post. Coming up next, we got Jarrett Rozier, Tiger Details, giving us updates on LSU Cruden right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over the air, 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. It's time now for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our good friend. He is our go-to LSU recruiting expert from TigerDetails.com. It's the one and only Jarrett Rozier. Jarrett, how you doing this morning, brother?
Man, if I was doing any better this morning, they'd be calling me RP3 around town, so I can't complain at all.
Listen to our guy.
Ayo!
Oh, there it is. Whoa. Oh, look, brother, I appreciate you making time for us, as always. Let's get right to it. Last week, you talked about expectations concerning a couple of D-line commitments that could be in store for the week, and then, boom, just like that, a string of three in a span of less than 48 hours. So what does it mean adding those three guys, and what can you tell us about those three guys being added to the class?
Yeah, it was a huge week for LSU with this 2020 class. That defensive line group has been such a huge priority. I mean, we've talked about the need to add some more bodies up there several times, and talked about some of these guys. In fact, I mean, I know we talked about the Louisiana guys, Jalen Lee and Patrick Jenkins, a few times, two of the best in the state, along with Jaquelin Roy from U-High and Jacobian Guillory from Alexandria. And going into last week, I knew that Pat Jenkins was going to be committing pretty quickly, Monday or Tuesday or so. And I had a pretty good feeling that they would add another guy later in the week, whether that be Jalen Lee or Eric Taylor, the guy from Alabama. And ultimately, not only did they get two of them, they got three, and they got three even more quickly than I anticipated. When just a couple of hours after we talked, Pat committed on Monday morning, and then Eric and Jalen both touching base with the coaches Tuesday night. Eric officially committing on Tuesday night, and Jalen on Wednesday morning. And I mean, all three kind of looks the part. You look at Ty Jenkins, 6'2", 270, you know, one of the smaller guys that they'll bring in on that defensive line. Very strong for his size, very quick and agile. So I think he's going to fit in nicely to kind of complement some of the other guys that bring in this class. Eric Taylor, 6'5", about 290. Jalen Lee from Live Oak, we have him listed 6'4", 293. And as much as Owen Company made of needing to really bolster the trenches, particularly after that loss to Alabama in November, that was a huge focus, was getting guys like this in, and to get three of them so quickly is huge. They're still not done. They're still continuing to recruit Jacobian and Jaquelin. But I think having all these other guys on board, if they can get a split out of those two, they're still feeling pretty good about life. And they're very much in play with both. So that defensive line group that's going to be critical to this 2020 class is really kind of taken form with some standout prospects. I think as much attention as gets paid to Jaquelin and Jacobian, Jalen Lee and Patrick Jenkins have chances to be as good as anybody in this class.
We're talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jarrett, a ton of immense talent came through for the prospects camp this past week there at LSU. What were some of your takeaways and some of the top performers?
It was really an incredibly impressive week. You look at where this class is now. Those defensive linemen pushed the number up for 2020 to 20 commitments at the moment, and they still had a lot of impressive 2020 talent on campus, both in terms of some guys that were already committed. A couple of guys that I think really stood out were Major Burns, who we've talked about a lot in recent weeks, and Elias Ricks. Those two guys we mentioned, it was good to see them on campus a week ago, just kind of building that rapport and working together. And then, you know, to see them both make a return trip, although it's a little bit easier for Major right down the road, but for Elias to come back, you know, a California prospect to come back out the following week, I think is really a nice sign, particularly as much as fans are kind of a little bit uneasy right now, I guess, with that national recruiting approach, knowing that keeping guys from California and D.C. And all over the country on board, it can be a little bit more difficult than a local prospect. So just having some of those guys back on campus again, I thought was big. And then those two guys I thought were two pretty noteworthy performers. But looking even beyond 2020, as many people are already on board with this class, you saw a ton of talent from 2021 and 2022 really already under the spotlight for LSU. The quarterbacks, I think, it was kind of interesting to see how many top quarterbacks came through from all over the country for both, you know, a couple guys from this year that are already committed, Max Johnson and TJ Finley. But then looking into 2021, you have Caleb Williams from the D.C. area, who came and looked really good Thursday and Friday and looks like he has a chance to be one of the best passers in that 2021 class and looked very at home at LSU. LSU appears to be a pretty big factor in his recruitment, and so he'll be one to watch. Luke Altmaier, another 2021 guy from Mississippi. Garrett Nussmeier, son of former Saints quarterback Doug Nussmeier, a 2021 guy that was really impressing Coach Orgeron, Coach Ensminger, and Coach Joe Brady. And, you know, a guy here locally, getting on down to 2022, Walker Howard picked up his offer Thursday after a really strong camp showing. The St. Thomas More quarterback that I know folks around Lafayette are really familiar with, son of former LSU quarterback Jamie Howard. And to see the quality of quarterbacks, because those guys are just kind of the tip of the iceberg that came through and were interested in being a part of this LSU program and really enjoying some of the relationships with O.E. and Joe Brady, who I think, as we've talked about before, is making a huge impact for this team and their ability to recruit on the offensive side of the football, I think was another big kind of noteworthy dynamic to watch unfold over those 3 days on campus.
We're talking with Jared Rozier of TigerDetails.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jared, you mentioned a few of them right there, but several tremendous quarterbacks on the prep level have been coming through Baton Rouge lately. Who are some more of those guys, and how did their visits seem to go?
For a quarterback specifically?
Yes, quarterback specifically.
You know, those were kind of some of the top quarterbacks that we saw this past week. Obviously, we've talked a lot about the Holsteins, and they've been really familiar. You know, their dad, Scott, another former LSU player, so Caleb and Eli are pretty familiar with LSU and the opportunity that's there. As far as this week, I think some of those guys that we were just talking about were some of the most notable to come through in terms of just seeing their performances and seeing some of like their comfort level with the staff and some of the interaction with the staff. There were some notable guys from some other positions that came through too, though. I failed to mention Coy Moore, Rummel receiver, who we've talked about before, came through, had a great workout on Thursday afternoon. Another local guy for y'all out in the 337, Malik Neighbors, a 2021 wide receiver who we talked about a lot, kind of the tail end of 7-on-7 season, working with Eli Holstein for that younger Bootleggers team. He came out and showed why he's going to be one of the top 2021 wide receiver targets for LSU. Shaz Preston from St. James picked up an offer, a 2022 guy. So there's a lot of talent really for some of these younger classes. It's kind of down to just these last few spots for this 2020 group, and I think a lot of that we'll kind of see shape up with some more guys up front on each side of the ball, and then a couple skill positions. Coy's a guy that.
Well, Jared, let me ask you that. Let me ask you that, because you got, you know, they're at 20 right now. LSU is. and they only got five spots remaining. So how do you think that's going to shake out? Are there specific players that they're targeting, that they're putting all their eggs in the basket, or is it more just positions that they're targeting?
Yeah, so some of those guys that we just mentioned, I think, will be key. Jaquellen Roy, the U-High defensive lineman, Jacobian Guillory, the Ash defensive lineman, Coy Moore, the wide receiver from Rummel. I think those are three really priority targets to watch. And so who they get there, as well as some other positions, running back, they're still trying to figure out a guy to get in this class. And so you look, if you get both of those defensive linemen, Coy or another wide receiver, and a running back, that's four of those five spots. And they would still ultimately love to add another offensive lineman, potentially a tight end. And so you start to get up against that 25 number. I do think that of the 20, you will probably have, someone, a player or two in that 20 that maybe doesn't ultimately end up in the signing class. And so that's going to continue to be a point to watch as the summer continues and then certainly into the fall. But I think you still look at another guy or two on each line, a wide receiver, a running back, potentially a tight end is kind of how it shakes up. And so some of those names we've talked about a lot are as big a priority as any. They're still trying to sort through some of the running back options. There are, we talked before about Zachary Evans, Kendall Milton, a couple of guys around the country that they love. Another guy here locally, Ashad Johnson, who, last football season, people were watching Ashad Clayton, but he recently changed his name, announced in the last couple months that he's going to be going by Ashad Johnson. Just kind of recognizing some family dynamics, but the Warren Easton kid, he's going to be one top to watch here locally. And I think, even though they're at 20, we're going to see some of those dominoes continue to fall. I won't be surprised if we see some more progress in this 2020 recruiting class as early as this week.
We're on with Jared Rozier of TigerDetails.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jared, I want to get you out with this, and it's not football, but it's basketball. Will Wade landed himself one of the best players in the state and nationally when he got the young man Cook, the Gatorade Player of the Year, to verbally commit to him for the upcoming class. Your thoughts on the young man and Will Wade being able to lock him up?
Yeah, Jalen Cook has been one of the top basketball players in Louisiana throughout his high school career. He arrived to Walker High with an awful lot of expectations and was able to lead that team. Really was kind of, as talented as that team was, he was as much a ringleader for it as anyone as a sophomore to help them win that state championship. And then those guys got back to the state championship game this past season. And so certainly a guy that comes with a lot of background of big expectations, 6 foot point guard, can handle the ball, get in the lane, can shoot. I think has really shown himself as somebody that can help stretch the defense, and that's been huge for the Wildcats the last couple of years to have his range up there running the offense. And I mentioned the expectations. He ends up being Louisiana Gatorade Player of the Year on the basketball court this past season, and so obviously realizing those expectations and to have him locked up and staying in state for the 2020 class, I think is really big for Will Wade and company. And then his best buddy Brian Thomas, the really big time prospect for that 2021 class. I think that kind of excites people to think if they've got Jalen on board, you got to feel good about what that means for Brian and just continuing to recruit year after year, the way that basketball team and that football team are recruiting has been incredibly impressive for the present, but also working ahead into the future.
Jarrett, as always, appreciate you breaking down all things LSU recruiting for us. As always, hope you get to enjoy your week and get some rest, my friend.
Dude, you'll like this. I'm about to leave here and head to the airport to go fly to Italy for a couple weeks.
Bravo, man. Bravo. So enjoy your time over in My man just drops that just like it's not a big – nobody's big. I just, I do like everyone else does. I'm just going to Italy for a few weeks. Not a big deal.
I just feel like I'm always trying to play catch up with you, and so I've got to make these big moments, these big statements, these big trips to feel like I can get on your level.
Flattery will keep you as a guest on this show, always, Jerry. Always. Well, dude, appreciate you making some time. Enjoy Italy, and we'll talk to you when you get back, brother. Enjoy your vacay.
Sounds good, man. Catch y'all soon.
Jerry Rosier, TigerDetails.com. Going on a well-deserved vacation. We do that. You know, Jeff Plarimo was going on vacation. He made time for us. Jerry Rosier's making time for us. We appreciate them. We do. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll close out hour number two right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. About to close out shop on hour number two. Coming up, hour three from the sporting news, helping us break down the College World Series Finals Championship, which begins tonight, Vandy versus Michigan. The one and only Bill Bender will be joining us at 8:32, so make sure to stay tuned for that coming up here in the third hour. But soccer's going on. We got Women's World Cup, and we got the men's national team involved in some type of cup that I do not follow and understand. So this is the time of the show that I turn it over to the man who's all things soccer, a former star at Point Coupee Catholic High School.
Second team All-State, don't forget.
Second team All-Stater, Cody Schutz, to bring us home.
That's all I got. That's all I got to hang my hat on.
With the soccer.
I'll talk briefly. The CONCACAF Gold Cup is the tournament that you're referring to, U.S. men is playing in. They kind of put it to Trinidad and Tobago over the weekend. It was fun to watch, actually, a men's soccer game. They were kind of doing what they wanted with the ball, but that's not really what I want to talk about. I want to talk more World Cup, but a quick shout-out to the U.S. men's national team. They are still undefeated in the CONCACAF Gold Cup. I think they play again maybe Tuesday or something like that. But the World Cup is currently going on right now.
Giving the men some
gotta give them a little love, yeah.
Okay.
The United States women's national team, that'd be the good one. They play in the knockout stages today. That'd be their first game in the knockout round of 16. They'll be taking on España. So the Spain national team on the women's side, not as highly touted as the men's national Spanish team. But Spain, nonetheless, going to be a very good opponent for the United States, probably their toughest opponent yet, and that's going to continue to happen. Hopefully, the U.S. women can come out at 11 a.m. today and still handle some business. So if you're going to be at work, stuck around or something, maybe find a way to sneak that stream in somewhere to watch you a little soccer. Now, that's the update for the U.S. women's. Over the weekend, though, I watched England and Cameroon, and it was an interesting game to watch, Ray. Cameroon, video replay at the World Cup now, basically, for certain things, offsides, handballs, whatever the case is. They have video replay now. Video replay put two goals on the board for England and took a goal off the board for Cameroon. When the goal was taken off the board for Cameroon, one of the better players, their best scorer on Cameroon's team, completely lost her mind, broke down into tears, was trying to leave the field. The coach for Cameroon had to, pick her up and hold her while yelling into her ear to get it together. Just tears everywhere. It was one of those very hard to watch. I can't really explain to you how it felt to watch somebody who you could see had worked so hard for however long to get to this point, and then to have video replay be the reason that her team is going to lose 3-0, England moving on in the knockout round.
That's kind of brutal.
It was just tough to watch. I mean, the calls were right. It's not like the refs did anything necessarily wrong. It was just still tough to watch a game ripped away from somebody, and you could see how much she cared about it. So it was a tough one to watch. But the big news today, 11 a.m. kickoff, Spain, United States, round of 16. I believe that we will win, Raymond.
Oh, USA.
All the way. You got your blue shirt on. You're looking good.
I do have my blue shirt on today, ready to rep the U.S. That's going to do it for hour number two. Thank you, second team All-Stater Cody Schutz. Pride of Catholic Point.
New Roads,
Louisiana in the house. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game.
Live live and local. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ragin' Cajun hoop star Elfrid Payton.
It's exciting to be able to represent, you know, your city, you know, somewhere where you grew up at and put that jersey on. See that says New Orleans on the front of it. I think it means a lot.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
That's a haul, folks.
Good morning and welcome to hour number 3 of RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over the air, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you would like to, you can give us a call as always, but you got to make sure to pay the toll. And paying the toll is being nice to the one and only Cody Schutz, the man on the one and twos. You can talk to him, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. That's the ARCO equipment hotline.
You're looking pretty good, TV ready today.
Woo!
As a matter of fact.
That's right.
I'm not trying to knock you by any means, but maybe the most TV ready you've been since we're doing this here. So if you have yet to check out RP3 and Company on either channel 32.1, if you're checking that out over the air, you can get that for absolutely free. 32.1, again, that channel, or 133, 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber as well. Either way, you're checking out RP3, or if you haven't yet, you need to, because today, I think, is that day. There's no telling when he's going to be this camera ready ever again. It may never happen.
It likely will not.
You remember the day that I think anyone ever in the history of the world has been most camera ready, though, for any show here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station? I'm going to go with myself. On Halloween, 2019. So I'm going to say Halloween 2018. I think it was just last year, possibly 2017. A lot of days mashed together. I came in here dressed.
A lot of days mashed. Like, they all bleed together. Right.
I came in here dressed like Ash Ketchum from Pokemon, full to the brim. I had the whole jacket. I had the shirt. I had plastic Pokeballs on my. That day was the most anyone's ever been TV ready in all of Delta Media here. But that's just my thoughts.
Cody Schutz, doing what he does best, interrupting sports talk with Rika? Not sports talk.
As you were.
as I was. Thank you for going in and just having the knowledge to hit that button yourself. I didn't even have to give you a glance.
You didn't that time.
I was like, he's really talking about my attire for a while, and then I was like, oh, and they're like, oh, I was the best dressed, and I was thinking, okay, so there was a day that she didn't wear sweatpants. And then it became the Pokemon, the Pikachu.
Right.
That's the only Pokemon I know.
You're lying. You're lying. You could name one. Come on.
Is one called Quad something?
Quad?
I have no idea.
There's a monster truck called Quad Chaos. Maybe a Quad. Maybe. There might be. I don't think so, though.
I'm just making up stuff.
I mean, there's one called Quag something, so we'll go with that.
See? There you go.
That's what you were thinking.
I'm hip. No, I am none of those things. We led off today's show talking about how the New Orleans Pelicans have it kind of extended the party atmosphere, if you will, from Thursday night's draft, where they were able to get the tremendous, they won the draft, right? They got the extra picks from the Lakers, and then they took that extra pick and they flipped it with Atlanta and got even more players. They got 3 first-round draft picks to go along with the 3 young players under the age of 24 that they obtained from the Los Angeles Lakers. They take Zion Williamson, number 1 overall. They take the young man out of Virginia Tech late in the first round. They take the big fella out of Texas, the center. They're not done making moves, but Zion is going to become the face of this franchise, even though David Griffin tells us that he's not going to be the leader of the franchise, which I believe at first. We talked about that on last week's show. But then we talked about, you know, who's having a better spring into summer transition than our man Alvin Gentry. I mean, he gets the vote of confidence. He gets to stay on as the head coach with David Griffin. Griffin takes him to the NBA draft lottery night where he has the terrific, tremendous, just honest reaction to getting the number one overall pick, which ended up being Zion Williamson. And this is a man who had a, you know, let's be honest, a definitely daunting season as a head coach. If he would be honest, I think he would say it was his most difficult season as a head coach ever. And now to be rewarded and to be relaxed, and Gentry just looks like he's having a good time and throwing the shade like he did at AD. That was amazing. That's a haul, folks. I just love the little pause there. A little shot at AD because he wrote, you know, he wore the That's All Folks t-shirt. So we let off the show talking about that. We also talked about Drew Brees winning his day in court against his former friend and jeweler who essentially extorted him, you know, defrauded him out of money. Court awarded him $6.1 million. We'll see if that number stays. This will, of course, go through an appeals process. A lot of times when you go through the appeals process, you may not win your appeal, but you get the settlement number to be reduced is how that usually works.
Right. I think the TLDR on this story here, which is the too long didn't read part of the story, is that
too long didn't. I like that.
Yeah, TLDR here is that Drew Brees bought some diamonds from his jeweler of 15 years, then had those said diamonds appraised by a separate jeweler, and Drew Brees was told that he overpaid for those diamonds by about $7 million. The courts awarded Drew Brees 6.1 back of those $7 million, but now we will see how long it's held up in appeals. And as Raymundo said, Drew may not see that 6.1. He may see less of that, and there's a possibility he'll still see none of it at all.
Right. It's more of winning his day in court. The money
right.
that
you're
he's
not going to pull the wool over my eyes. Exactly. That's how I thought it too. I didn't want to speak, but you know, we can speculate a little bit. It's kind of our jobs. That's kind of what I think this is from Drew Brees as well. That $6 million, of course he wants, don't get me wrong. If you told Drew Brees, if I asked Drew Brees today, hey Brees, can I have $6 million? He's not going to say, he's not going to say yes.
Drew, hook
right,
me up. Your
right.
boy needs a loan.
But I don't think.
Payday loan. I'll pay you back in like 2 weeks with interest.
With interest. But I don't think that the $6 million is where this whole thing is rooted. I think it is I've known you for this long. I can't believe you would do this to me. Like I'm not just going to sit around and let this happen. We're going to take this and do what we can in court with it. So I think it's more of a principle than it is the actual money, but it could be a little bit of the money too. You never know.
Yeah. And it could be a little bit about the money. So we talked about that. We also talked about when it comes to defrauding, we had to have to talk about this as well. The situation involving former hospital foundation president leading fundraiser using fundraising money to have hook up his family and friends to LSU and Saints games, pay for the travel. He was actually taking gift cards for cancer patients there at the hospital and using them for his own. And this, based on these court documents that he admitted to and he's pled guilty to, also came out of this as a situation involving not one but two different members of the LSU football fraternity. Rohan Davey is somehow involved because of distant family members receiving money from this cat.
But not while he was in school.
But not while he was in school, but now. So that's a head scratcher. And then obviously Alexander, the former star offensive lineman, allegedly there was a payment made to his father from the foundation via the man who's now going to prison. So we touched on that. Also touched on Jakeen and Gant signing that two-way deal. Former Raging Cajun star is going to get an opportunity to play at the next level. Yet another one of Bob Marlin's recruits, Elford Payton, we know got to play has played in the association quite a long time. Sean Long briefly played in the NBA with the Philadelphia 76ers. He's about to enter his second year playing down under. Frank Bartley just wrapped up his first season playing in the Canadian League. So once again, another Bob Marlin player getting a chance to play pro ball. So congratulations to Coach Marlin as well as to Jakeenan Gant for that. And a reminder, coming up, 8:32, Bill Bender from the Sporting News will be joining us, helping us break down the College World Series finals. Championship round begins tonight. Michigan, Vandy. Michigan was one of the four final teams to get a berth in to the NCAA postseason overall.
What a run.
Like, they barely got into a regional and have just marched all the way to the finals. They'll be taking on Vandy, the traditional power, the program that's been there year in, year out. We expected them. They started the season as either one of the number one or number two ranked team in the country, the Commodores, or as Cody lovingly refers to them, the Commodores. Shout out to Papa Schutz.
Yes.
They'll face off. We'll talk about that with Bill Bender.
That was my pick. That was my pick.
That was your pick.
Not like I went out on a limb to pick Vanderbilt to win.
No, and as we've picked up in the course of doing this show together, when you make your picks, let me tell you, you go out on a limb, you play it fast and loose with your picks.
You never know.
Who's going to win the Masters, Cody? Tiger Woods.
Who won the Masters Pick'em Challenge, by the way, Ray? I'm just wondering who won that.
Well, you didn't because you're not allowed as a member of Delta Media.
You're right. You are technically correct. But I clicked said name of Tiger Woods. Any other Pick'em, though. Any other Pick'em, I'm always very wrong. But I liked Vanderbilt to win it. I wanted to see Florida State. We've been over this a handful of times. Wanted to see Florida State. That didn't happen. Thought Vanderbilt probably had the best team. But now I think the matchup is very intriguing because it's the best team in my eyes, which is Vanderbilt, against
the Cinderella team.
The team that's playing the best right now, the team that seems like whatever they do is working out for them in the Michigan Wolverines. So this is what baseball is all about. And this right here, let me say another thing about it, and you and Bill can talk more in depth about this, but this right here, this series, this because you have Vanderbilt, who has been the team for basically the entire season, and then you've got Michigan, who's been good, but kind of coming out of nowhere here.
Michigan.
This is why we need, and I'm so glad that we have, the championship for college baseball being a series.
Yes, I would agree with that. Now, back in the day, it wasn't that way.
No, because that's how LSU beat, I forget who it was, but LSU won all their national championships, basically, except for one or two, maybe, in just one game, winner-take-all fashion, which, I mean, whatever, that's the way, you can only play how the tournament's set up, but because you got the team that's been so good for so long, and then the team that's really, really good right now, it's going to take, I think, more than just one game to determine which is the better team of these two.
I would agree with that, because I think this is going to be, this is definitely going to be a fight. And, you know, look, the sentimental favorite's going to be Michigan. People are going to root for Michigan because they are the Cinderella team, and everyone's going to be behind them for that. And you can kind of understand that for sure. I don't know. I'll be interested to see how that goes. We also talked about earlier, and it's our poll question, so we want to kind of touch back on that. Over the weekend was Pistol Pete's birthday. Possibly the greatest LSU basketball player ever. Second most recognizable, even now, and he's been dead for
even
a
now,
generation.
Yeah. Even now.
The name of the building where LSU plays its home basketball games is called the Pete Maravich Assembly Center. Pete Maravich is, in fact, not in the LSU Athletics Hall of Fame because he did not get a degree from LSU.
It's a real thing.
That's a real thing. That's actually a real thing. We want to give your thoughts about that. You can give us a call if you like, too. Arco Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. Do you think people like Pistol Pete and others should be in the LSU Athletics Hall of Fame, even if they don't receive a degree from LSU?
The link to that poll question is on our Twitter, RP3.
Oh, follow us on the Twitter, 1037 The Game. Go to our website, 1037thegame.com. Vote on today's poll question. We'll leave it up all day. We'll give you the final tally on tomorrow's show. But give us your thoughts. Leave comments as well on our Twitter account. Let us know what you think. Should this be a thing? Because when I tell people, they're always surprised. Right. Well, what do you mean, Pistol Pete's not in the LSU Hall? Like, no. Yes, Pistol Pete, the artist formerly known as Chris Jackson, and others The majority of the all-century team for LSU men's basketball is not in its own Hall of Fame because the majority of the all-century team did not graduate from LSU.
Right. Good enough to leave early.
Good enough to leave early and get into other Hall of Fames. But not good enough for the LSU Athletics Hall of Fame. So share your thoughts with that. When we come back, Houston Astros finally in their losing skid. Avoid the sweep at the hands of the New York Yankees. We'll talk all about it. Coming up next right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
1-0, and he hits this one well to right field, backing up on a Judge. He looks up, and it's gone! Tyler White, a grand slam! And the Astros lead 6-0. What a shot by Tyler White the other way.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. That's Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over the air, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you'd like, you can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. Coming up here shortly at 8:32, we'll be talking with the Sporting News' own Bill Bender. He's going to give us a preview of the College World Series finale championship round, Michigan versus Vanderbilt from Omaha. But right now, I want to talk a little Houston Astros baseball. The losing skid has finally, mercifully, come to an end. They avoid the sweep by the Yankees by winning 9-4 yesterday. The Astros are now 49-30 on the year. Those bats woke up, 14 hits, 9 runs scored. They took care of business. And look, it was going to take a little while. Altuve had himself a monster game, 2-for-5, 2 runs scored, an RBI. Bregman went hitless, but yet garnered another walk. Brantley went 2-for-4. Alvarez, the young man, 2-for-5. He is on a torrid pace. Gurriel, 2-for-4. Reddick, 2-for-4. Tyler White had the big hit that you heard. They were sensational. The bats were. Verlander returned to form after a couple of subpar performances for him. 7 full innings. Only 3 runs on 4 hits, struck out 9. So a complete performance there by the Stros. And, you know, look, Major League Baseball, you're going to go through these lulls. The Astros went through a bad lull, a bad losing streak, okay? Their longest of the year by far. But the Astros do beat the Yankees 9-4. They snap the 7-game losing streak. They avoid a winless road trip. Altuve provided a great spark. Verlander returned to form. Tyler White and Jordan Alvarez were able to put the game away. White's grand slam, by the way, was the Astros' 7th grand slam this season, which ties the franchise record for a season. It is June. They already have 7 grand slams.
Talk about making a pay. Get runners on.
That's what I always say. The lineup, it's going to be so difficult to pitch around guys in that lineup. They just, with the additions, and you know, you got Alvarez that's been called up now. He's been tremendous. Brantley was a terrific free agent signing. They don't have a hole in their lineup, and they got Altuve back, and he's going to be returning to form. Bregman's playing at an MVP level. Oh, by the way, Springer is still on his rehab assignment. He'll be joining the ball club shortly. And then they'll get Carrera back after the All-Star break.
Trending up.
Yes, they are trending up. Here's an interesting stat about Jordan Alvarez, the young man, the 21-year-old from Cuba, the rookie for the Stros. He's the first player in Major League Baseball history to have 7 home runs and 16 RBIs in his first 12 games. He's adjusting to life in the big show pretty well. Like, those curveballs are not tricking him, okay? No, this young man is quickly becoming a phenom for the Stros. Once again, first player in Major League Baseball history to have 7 home runs and 16 RBIs in his first 12 games. Just ridiculous performance for him. You know,
because that's what the Astros needed, another young guy coming out of nowhere that seems to be going to be a very, very good player in the MLB. So that's what they needed.
Yes, in his first 11 games. Now, the Stros had struggled in those first 11 games. Once again, the road trip, they were piling up losses left and right before Sunday, salvaging a game there in New York, avoiding the sweep by the Yankees and avoiding going winless on the road trip. But through his first 11 games, he had 6 home runs, 14 RBIs, batting .326. His OPS was 1.222.
It's not all power numbers.
No. This cat is a complete hitter by any sabermetrics you want to look at.
Run it through the algorithm. It comes out the other side saying, good hitter.
Yeah. Run him through the computer system. It comes out saying, he's a ball player.
Right.
Right? Like, you just look at the kid and you're like, yeah, there you go. They have themselves another one. Once again, bravo to the Astros and their front office and their farm system for scouting properly, targeting guys, and developing them. Because here you are once again, and Cody made a joke about it, but here they are once again with yet another young player that is getting called up and is contributing immediately for them. Like right off the bat, like it's not a big deal. I'm 21 years old. I belong in the big leagues. Here I am. Like, they have a whole team filled with guys like that. It's ridiculous what the Astros have been able to do.
Like, I was impressed with what the Cubs and Theo Epstein did, but this is better. I'm sorry. And now I'm a Cub. This is better.
And that's saying a lot.
This is better.
Because Theo was able to bring a world championship to Chicago, to the north side. No Stros on tonight. They have the day off. They'll be back home for a 3-game set against the Pittsburgh Pirates.
More interleague play.
That is correct. They'll be back on 103.7 Game tomorrow night, Tuesday. Pre-game 6:30, first pitch 7:10. You can listen to that live right here on 103.7 The Game. When we come back, Bill Bender, Sporting News, will join us right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over the air, 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. The College World Series, the final matchup has been made. The championship round is set. Michigan, the Cinderella team, one of the last 4 teams that even got into the NCAA postseason tournament, versus the perennial power out of the SEC, a team that many people expected to be here and is favored to win, the Vanderbilt Commodores. Those two teams will face off starting tonight with game 1. We'll talk more about Michigan and its Cinderella story, as well as this College World Series, with our next guest as we head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. He is the national college football writer for the Sporting News, as well as a member of the Football Writers Association of America. It's the one and only Bill Bender. Bill, how have you been, and how are you this morning, brother?
Hey, I'm doing well, Raymond. Thanks for having me on. And as always, just kind of count the days. We'll get some football, but enjoying a little bit of summer first, and then we'll get into it.
There we go. Yes, yes. We're counting down the days. Thankfully, we have some compelling baseball to kind of distract us and then help us eat up some of the summer before we can get to college football season. You wrote an article about the Michigan Wolverines, and I wanted to ask you about that. Just how special is this season for the Wolverines, who have, you know, haven't had this kind of run in more than a generation?
Well, I've been telling people, you know, somebody who grew up in Ohio, people ask, why doesn't the Big Ten have good baseball? And I said, you know, when I was in high school once, we played in 4 inches of snow and 10-degree weather, and I said, I'm going to pick a different sport here. So, and I really do that. That is something that the Big Ten can't control, is the weather. It's cold, and
just unpredictable in Ohio through June. But as far as Michigan goes, for them to run through three straight games in the winner's bracket, that hasn't happened for a Big Ten team since 1966. So, it's been pretty special. The pitching's been awesome. And then tonight they're going to find out, because obviously Vandy's been there, done that, and has a really good team.
Yep. Vandy has been there and done that. We're talking with Bill Bender here of the Sporting News on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Tell us a little bit about the Wolverines, though. You know, there was a moment where it appeared that they weren't even going to be in the tournament whatsoever. They get in as one of the last four teams in, Bill. What were the expectations even then? Hey, great, they got into the postseason, but, you know, they'll be eliminated in the regional. Has this run even taken them by surprise or their fan base by surprise?
Oh, absolutely. But, I mean, you know, it's like when Indiana made it 13, they had a team that was expected to maybe make a little bit of a run. I don't think Michigan was there when they got in, but especially when you get matched up with UCLA. But I think the way they've approached it is ever since the UCLA win, kind of, you know, playing with house money, whatever the phrase you want to use, and that's exactly what they've done. And they, you know, when you saw them come out and play Texas Tech the first time, it was a big win. Come out the second time, another big win. And, you know, when they beat Florida State. But, I mean, they didn't play any of the one of the four SEC teams. And I think that's what we get tonight. You know, you get the SEC team, you get the Big Ten team. You and I have talked enough through football that I always tell people the best bowl matchups are SEC versus Big Ten because of the, you know, the differences, a little bit of differences in the culture of each part of the country, but the same exact passion for the sport. So I think that's why these next couple nights will be pretty fun.
We're talking College World Series here with Bill Bender of the Sporting News on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Bill, let's talk a little bit about the two men in charge of these programs. Both are highly respected, and they both know each other quite well. Tell us a little bit about their connection, where they've worked together, and the familiarity and the respect they have between each other.
Well, Bogut considers, you know, the Vanderbilt coach a mentor, and that's a big thing. So, yeah, I mean, these are two excellent coaches. They're going to, you know, have their – I think it's, you know, it's the same thing at this level as it is in any other level. And, you know, we have a – not to make it about me or anything, but we have a youth baseball tournament this week with our kids, and I tell them the same thing. When you get to this level, it comes down to the team makes a few mistakes, that one or two big mistakes. And or maybe just like as Louisville found out the other night, maybe not having your pitcher run his mouth in the eighth inning. So I think there's going to be a lot of respect between these two teams, and that flows through their coaches. And obviously, I look for this to go three. I think it'll go three, and hopefully we get a fantastic finish.
We're talking College World Series with Bill Bender of the Sporting News here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. You know, we mentioned both of the coaches, and obviously the Michigan coach was on staff of Corbin there at Vandy for a few years, and he even said at the presser the other day, Corbin did, Vanderbilt is not Vanderbilt without Eric Backich. Obviously, immense amount of respect between the two men. Does that familiarity help or hurt either one of these coaches and these teams?
Well, I think probably helps because they probably know what to expect from each other. I mean, obviously, when you're talking about Tim Corbin, you're talking about a guy that's won the SEC five times. You know, he's won the national championship. And I think when you have that, there's a certain level of respect that comes with it. But so they'll know each other's rotations and certain things within the game, nuances that the other one knows. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, what the chess match between them. Maybe if, you know, does Michigan's only used three pitchers in the whole series so far. So can Vanderbilt push them to go to their bullpen a little sooner? You know, on the flip side, what does Michigan do to maybe rattle Vanderbilt's very good starting pitching staff? And I think both of those things will be keys, as they normally are in big game situations. And, you know, Michigan's been hitting the ball. I mean, I don't even think anybody else expected them to do what they did to Texas Tech on Friday with how many runs they scored. So I think for Vanderbilt, the key is how do they slow down Michigan's offense, you know, and, you know, what does their pitching staff do to make sure that Michigan doesn't get off to a hot start? Because like you said, they're playing with all that confidence.
Talking with Bill Bender of the Sporting News here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. And it is two different teams in the regard of Michigan's playing with house money, right? They're the Cinderella team. They're the team that no one expected to even be here. Hell, they weren't even the team that anyone expected out of the Big Ten to even make a run. And yet here they are, two wins away from winning a national championship. Vandy, on the other hand, is the more seasoned team. Bill, in your experience covering college athletics, how much does that going to play of a role? I mean, Michigan has to come in playing pretty loose, right? Because they got nothing to lose. No one expected them to be here, where Vandy may have more pressure because they were the perennial preseason team.
Yeah, I mean, that could be. But then again, it could come down to, you know, when you talk about teams that play with those emotions, I think that's why it's important Michigan to get off to a good start, because if Vandy comes in and thumps them, you wonder if that mentality kicks in. So I would say they're probably coming in about the same. I mean, Vandy had to do what they had to do to get there, beat a good Louisville team in the semis, dominated their half of the bracket. Michigan's obviously been the emotional story and the easy one to latch on to, too, because of all those things we talked about with the Big Ten. But, I think they're both really good teams, modeled the same way in a lot of ways, as we talked about with Corbin and Backage, and we'll see how they respond to the big environment. I just think it's a really cool thing, like I said, that you have this SEC team going against the Big Ten team with all of that going, and as soon as they're done, we get to start thinking about football.
I love that. Bill, how much is this run by Michigan kind of being received throughout the Big Ten? Because the Big Ten is not, if I'm correct, the Big Ten has not won a College World Series since Ohio State did it way back in 1966. Michigan hasn't won it since 1962. You know, is there a sense of pride going on throughout the rest of the Big Ten, kind of cheering on Michigan for maybe breaking through and winning the sport that's been dominated by the West Coast and the South?
Not in Columbus, where I live. You know, they wouldn't root for Michigan in this spot in under any search. But I get what you're saying. No, I'm sure some Big Ten fans, I mean, if you're tuning in as a Big Ten fan, you should be rooting for the Big Ten to win. And vice versa with the SEC. I don't think enough SEC schools really hate Vanderbilt, other than maybe Tennessee, that they would be rooting against them tonight. So, yeah, I think so. I think, you know, the fact that it hasn't been since 1966. I was telling somebody, so I went to Ohio University, which is in the MAC, and they've gone farther than any Big Ten team in 1975. And, well, they had this guy, some of your listeners might have heard of, named Mike Schmidt, playing shortstop. So, I mean, we were pretty good that year, but it's been so – and they had Nick Swisher's dad on that team as well. So that was a pretty loaded team that we still talk about down in Athens, Ohio. And that's the thing. I mean, it's so few and far between with the Big Ten or the MAC making a run that I think you, if you're a Big Ten fan, you should be rooting for them.
We're talking with Bill Bender of the Sporting News here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Bill, it's been a pretty tremendous College World Series, some drama. Louisville, the pitcher, of course, becoming a viral sensation with his performance walking off the mound, rather, than what he did on it. But the story, a big story of this has been Florida State's head coach leaving with class and having his run there at Florida State come to an end. Just how well-regarded is Martin across the country, whether that's Big Ten country or the Pac-12 or wherever?
Well, I followed their run one of the years, and just again, there's been so many that, yeah, obviously, that he's one of the best coaches to coach. I mean, Florida State's a regular in that stage, whether it's the Super Regionals or the ACC Championship or the College World Series. They were always there, and you knew how they were going to play. I mean, countless draft picks, all those kind of things. And I think, you know, baseball, like the other one, when you lose a guy like that, you hope that the guy coming behind him, you know, runs the program in the same fashion. Because I think college baseball, these guys, you know, we know who the big names are in football. We know who they are in basketball, of course. But baseball probably gets the least attention of the three.
Bill, we'll get you out on this. Who do you got winning this College World Series, Michigan or Vandy?
That's a tough. I'll stick, since I'm living in Big Ten country, I'll go with the Wolverines. I think if they get a win from Tommy Henry, who was dominant in his last start, and that offense carries over, that they're going to find a way to beat Vanderbilt. But I wouldn't be surprised if it goes the other way. Vanderbilt's obviously got some outstanding pitching as well. But go with the Big Ten team, and then we'll see what that means, like how they carry it over, you know, because when we get back here next year, the SEC will probably have three or four teams back in the World Series, and maybe the Big Ten can put a team in there every once in a while.
Bill, Appreciate you making time for us, as always, brother. How many days until college football? I know you know.
I know you guys know. I never keep the countdown. I know that I got 12 hours till my son's youth league game. And no, we're not going to be like those guys in Colorado that were throwing punches. We make it about the kids up here.
I believe it is 68 days until kickoff because yesterday was 69 days, and that didn't get past me.
That is one difference between the SEC country and the Big Ten country. You guys have, like, multiple countdown clocks, like a situation room for when it starts. And I always respect you guys for that.
Bill, appreciate you, man. Enjoy the rest of your summer. We'll have you on heading into the season, my friend. And good luck with your son's youth league.
Hey, we'll have fun with it tonight. Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate it.
That's Bill Bender from the Sporting News joining us, breaking down the College World Series. We'll have him on, of course, during the fall for college football because that's his bread and butter, but he's doing some college baseball work as well.
I have to give a little bit of credit. The famous CD is the one who pointed out to me. He sent me a text yesterday of somebody tweeted out 69 days until college football. Thought that was very nice of him to text me. So that's how I know that. A little shout out to the famous CD. And if you haven't...
It'll be here in no time.
You're right. If you haven't been following the College World Series, like watching every single game, maybe if you missed that Louisville-Vanderbilt game, it's maybe not safe for work, but I would recommend going check out that video of the pitcher from Louisville. He drops double FUs on a Vanderbilt batter as he strikes him out. Walking to the dugout, he drops an FU twice on this kid, and in the very next inning, gives up the lead, and Louisville's season is over. Take that for what it is. I'm just reporting the facts.
Yeah, you want to go out there and you want to talk big and you want to puff up your chest.
Look, I'm just reporting he dropped two FUs after striking out Vandy in the eighth inning, and then in the ninth inning, he lost the game.
He was feeling himself
a little bit.
Yeah, man.
These things happen. There's a lesson to be learned here. There is a lesson to be learned,
and you will forever be a meme. And
that's such a good call.
Forever. So congratulations if that's what you got. Look.
When SportsCenter like tweets out on their official account, like, oh boy, you feeling yourself, Louisville, with the big eye emoji, you know you made it. Well done, sir.
Yeah, made it for all the wrong reasons.
I understand you get the emotion gets the better of you, but yikes.
Louisville. It's always something. It's either the football coach being involved in an affair and wrecking his motorcycle.
On the basketball court, right? And that's the thing that happened, right?
And then the basketball coach and all types of scandal with prostitutes. There's always something going on with Louisville.
Who knew Kentucky was as controversialistic as he was?
It's just like, come on, man. Can't y'all just act right for just like one athletic year? Just don't get into something.
Just for
one athletic year. Is that
Kentucky
hard?
Kentucky part of the region that brought us Mountain Dew, though, so I can't be too upset with them.
But Louisville gets no credit for that.
Louisville itself doesn't. But Kentucky and Tennessee, that's the region their Mountain Dew comes from. And I love Mountain Dew. Always try to end on a positive note. Try to end on a positive note. Whether that's a sports-related positive note or it's just telling you that I love Mountain Dew. Either way.
You love Mountain Dew, and I love closing out a show in style. We'll do that after this break right here on RP3 and Company on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over the air, 24-hour sport coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. I want to take a moment to thank our guest, of course, Bill Bender from Sporting News. There's no one better for college football, let me tell you. That guy knows his stuff. Appreciate him coming on, and helping us preview the College World Series finale championship. Vandy, Michigan, starts tonight, game one on the mothership. Also want to thank Jarrett Rozier from Tiger Details, giving us the latest updates on Tiger football recruiting. And, of course, I want to thank Cody Schutz, the man, the myth, the legend himself.
And just wave to Raymond.
Reminder, go to the 103.7 The Game website. That's 103.7thegame.com. Our poll question is up. We need your votes. How crazy is it that Pistol Pete isn't in the LSU Athletics Hall of Fame? That's your poll question of the day. You have all day to vote on it. You can find it on our homepage, Not crazy, a little crazy, a lot crazy. Those are your three options. And as it stands right now, 100% of the votes, a lot crazy. 100. I don't anticipate that coming off that 100 very much.
only for the trolls and troglodytes.
They'll
take that off the 100%.
Tremendous way to start off the week. Cody.
Raymond.
You have anything else to say to the people of Acadiana, our diehard listeners? Anything that you need, any wisdom you need to give them on their way out the door this morning?
Join us. No, let's talk a little bit WWE real quick. 60-second WWE breakdown. All you need to know from Stomping Grounds. Becky Lynch, still champ. Kofi Kingston, still champ. Ricochet, new United States champ. And no Bray Wyatt yet. Here's basically your breakdown. Yeah. It was a decent show. It was a show. As Clint would say.
I like that.
That's going to be Clint's breakdown. It was a show.
It was a show that was on the television.
Right. I mean, like I said, it was better than I expected, but I had very low expectations going in. So, I mean, good on WWE for making it better than I expected, but I wasn't expecting much.
As you should. Make sure to tune in for tomorrow's show. We'll talk with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. We'll also tentatively scheduled have Dr. Brian Maggard on from UL, talking about a couple events coming up throughout Acadiana involving the Raging Cajuns, plus much, much more. Been a tremendous show. Reminder, Jordy Hulberg show from 2 to 4 today. No Astros on tonight, so the good brother, 3 hours of Ben Love, bumper to bumper sports from 4 to 7 o'clock right here on 103.7 The Game. Also, if you have a chance, go check out the new weekly podcast by Ben Love, how the fan experience is changing in-game, even outside of college and pro ballparks. Ben has that posted right now, so make sure to go check that out. Dan Patrick Show's next.